happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You'll be able to watch this program by going to my personal Facebook or to Progressive Radio Network or YouTube later today. We edit it so that you can see the video stream. Today, we're going to talk about health and healing, but something very special. What would you think if I told you that there was one person on this planet who spent over 24,000 hours researching what would help us slow down the aging process at the cellular level? Not only that, actually help rejuvenate the cells, help re-energize the mitochondria, the energy factory of the cells. Robert Houston, award-winning investigative journalist, a scholar, a very patient, very self-effacing, quiet person, is here in studio. And he is the brother of someone that's been on this program many times in the past, Gene Houston. I have an enormous amount of respect for Gene Houston because at the height of the feminist movement, I was working with some leading feminists. And I had suggested that what the feminist movement could benefit from, in addition to all the things they were doing, was some spiritual feminism. Those that weren't in the hard polemic field, but rather those who saw that behind the so-called man versus woman phenomena, there was the power behind and manipulating everything. And there were a group, Patricia's Son was one, Jean Houston, another. There were about 10 women who were unique. These were the wise women of the world. Today it would be Vandana Shiva would be one of them. And of course, the people who you won't hear on the air as spiritual feminists, you'll just hear them talking about whatever the issue is. So we're going to talk a little bit about rejuvenation, a whole new platform. In fact, the Progressive Radio Network is now bringing in several of the world's leading spiritual feminists to do a program on deep philosophical and spiritual issues. It's sorely missing, and I'll explain a little bit why that's important when I introduce Robert Houston. We have another guest also today. We'd like to keep you up to date and in the loop on everything that is socially relevant to issues that we can change. And one is the enormous outpouring against glyphosate, Monsanto's primary ingredient in the weed killer Roundup, and where they have tried to sugarcoat its safety, much like the tobacco industry did, or the asbestos industry did, or the fluoride industry did, or the mercury industry did, or the vaccine industry did, they've gotten away with it up till now. Now this gigantic corporation, which just in the process of the merging with Bayer, it's now bringing out its next product, maybe because they see that the reputation of glyphosate is so bad, there's so much bad science about it, that they need another moneymaker. So they're coming up with what is called Dicamba, D-I-C-A-M-B-A. Well, it's worse. So we will be the program today to tell you why it's bad, with the guest who is an award-winning investigative journalist, Kerry Gillen. He's an environmentalist and agricultural journalist, investigative reporter, and he's been traveling around the nation for years to observe and report on the state of America's food system and farming and meeting with U.S. regulators and lawmakers and scientists. And so we're going to tell you why Monsanto's new herbicide We're calling it a monster, deadly. And it's destroying millions of acres of growth and putting 10 states into a state of environmental emergency. So we're going to be ahead of this. And we have a lot of activists in this audience throughout the United States, throughout the world. So we'll give you what you need today. We'll also post articles that you can use that are scientifically based and calls to action so we can get at the front of this battle, not at the end of what happened before, where we're told something is safe, everybody thinks it is, then 20 years in, it's not safe. Also today, I'm going to do a commentary, America Asleep, John Stepling, and then also Fukushima plant is releasing 770,000 tons of radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean by Dar Jamal. What do you think is going to happen when you put that much radioactive isotopes in the body of water? It doesn't dissolve. This whole notion that historically the answer to pollution is dilution, it's an oxymoron. The fact that you put one single drop of mercury into an Olympic swimming pool, it dilutes one drop, and it still makes the pool toxic. You're talking about parts per billion, and it's still toxic. So now imagine we're not dealing with one drop in a swimming pool. We're dealing with 770,000 tons of radioactive material. Some of the radioactive material will last until the end of time. So what's that going to do to the seaweed that's harvested and the fish that's harvested and all that tuna and all the sushi restaurants and everything else? If I were you, I'd pay attention to this because no matter how they try to swing this, it's deadly. Also today, I'm going to give you the part one of a board-certified physician who was curious about the efficacy of vaccines. She accepted that vaccines were safe, posed no harm, none. You might once in a while get a hot lot, but according to the experts, it was just an occasional. I mean, better to save a million children than sacrifice one child. And then she started doing her research, and she couldn't believe what she was seeing. So then she spent more time, hundreds of hours, became thousands of hours. Thousands of hours became almost 20,000 hours. She is one of the most educated persons on the planet about vaccine safety and efficacy. Now, she does not recommend any vaccines because none are safe and none are effective. You'll hear her statements. Now, have you seen her on television? Have you seen her on, let's say, Democracy Now? Pro-vaccine? No. Have you seen her on CNN? Debating Anderson Cooper? No. No. Those who have the knowledge, the degrees, the scholarship, and the temerity and the honesty are excluded from all discussion. And she's not alone. But you'll hear her, and if you have video streaming, you'll see her on today's program, just at a time when they're starting to push vaccination again. And also today, we'll show you this short segment on a water car, a Japanese car that runs just on water, doesn't need any electricity, no gas, no diesel, just water, which means that you could go entirely across America if you had enough water in your car. And it gets a lot of mileage per tank of water. So this is the future. Needless to say, all you have to have in a paradigm, according to Marilyn Ferguson, someone who I haven't, she was one of those great minds of the 1960s and 70s. I believe she passed some years ago. But she said that there is a turning point. Now, that wasn't her, you know, the turning point is Fritjof Capra. But in her book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, she talked about how all it takes is for one person to come up with an idea that is so radical, so unique, and so obvious that everyone else working on all these other ideas are suddenly looked upon like dinosaurs. And that water car is going to put all these other people who are doing things in the rearview mirror. So we're going to talk about all this. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. always on health and nutrition. And this is the latest study, and this comes from the Technical Institute in China. And it says that the lutein, which is a phytonutrient found in a lot of fruits and like tomatoes, for example, you frequently find it where you also find lutein. And it helps cause gastric cancer to stop because it interferes in the signaling pathways that allow the cancer to manifest. And it causes programmed cell death, meaning it causes the cancer cell to die. Otherwise, the cancer cell's immortal. So that's very important that you get more of that into your diet, which simply means that you have to eat more fruits and vegetables. Now, what are the best anti-cancer vegetables as far as this particular nutrient? L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N. Celery be your number one. Now, think about how many times I've suggested you start your day with a green juice and a diluting juice. You can always add in the really powerful dark greens, cilantro, parsley, which is a form of parsley, and Swiss chard, arugula. But those are extremely dense. They're healing, but most people can't handle them. So you have a diluting one. One's easy on the digestive system. Celery and cucumber are both green. They both are great at helping to relieve edema and swelling, especially if you have swelling in the feet and legs. But they also have a lot of micronutrients, and they also help lower your blood pressure, and they thin your blood. It's a natural way of keeping the red blood cells from aggregating or clumping together. I remember it was about 30 years ago. I wanted to see what the impact would be of what was called the doctor's diet. So I went down to Sloan Kettering, and then that whole stretch on First Avenue in New York, there's a lot of teaching schools going further down New York University. And at that time, it was, Bellevue Hospital. And I asked over 500 doctors over a one-month period, mainly standing out there at lunch when they come out, what kind of diet do you recommend for your patients? And we wrote it down. And we did this at several places. And then I compiled it. And then we decided to see what would happen if we fed three different diets. One was your standard rat chow. These are little pellets. They're standard. Every lab in America uses it. That's what they feed. That and water, nothing else. And they put the rats in these little tiny boxes. There's no room in the box, just enough for the rat to turn around. And they have a water bottle that's stuck through a little grated top so the rat can't get out. And that's how these rats are kept, very inhumane. So one group of rats was given standard rat chow. Another group of rats was given the doctor's diet. And this was standardized in protein, fat, carbohydrate, vitamins, minerals, based upon what the diet consisted of. Now, mind you, this is the same type of diet that a doctor would recommend to a dietitian in a hospital. Remember, the dietitian, and I am a registered dietitian, a dietitian cannot create the diet. The dietitian has to take the diet that the doctor prescribes and then creates the food groups and selects the different serving sizes to give to the patient. Okay. So now we had a doctor's diet and standard rat chow. Then I gave what I called the living food diet. Very same diet I recommend today. Meaning 75% raw, all organic, and the other 25% that is heated so that none of the phytonutrients and antioxidants, like vitamin C, are destroyed. Because some foods are actually increased in bioavailability when they're heated. For example, all the studies show that tomato sauce has more lycopene available than tomatoes because the heating releases them. The same way would be for broccoli. If you ate broccoli raw, it's oligocellulose. 90% is going to go right through you. You're not going to get the benefit of the indole-3-carbinol or the isothiocyanates, all the anti-cancer agents. You're not going to benefit because it's in the fiber and swept out. But if you steam that broccoli lightly and then eat it, now the cells have opened up and the material in the cells made available. So broccoli, carrots, cauliflower, celery are better juiced or steamed because you get more nutrients. So here's the nutrients that you can get that would help with cancer. And these are not just your normal cruciferous vegetables. That's a separate group altogether. Celery, broccoli, green peppers, parsley, thyme, T-H-Y-M-E, dandelion, perilla, P-E-R-I-L-L-A, chamomile tea, carrots, olive oil, peppermint, rosemary, navel oranges, and oregano. So that's what this study found really made a difference, and that's good. We need to know that so we know what to actually eat. Now, separately, in another study, there's a whole new group of science coming out now that's radically changing our understanding of the immune system. Here's what this says. A revolutionary revisioning, natural autoimmunity as the master conductor of homeostasis, how microbiology distorted the foundations of immunology. Now, this article, which I'm posted, talks about how historically we believe that when your immune system is challenged, it tries to defend itself and it can create an autoimmune reaction. So if you have an autoimmune reaction, your body's always attacking itself. This says that's not true. This is flying in the face, and this is a major study. This is saying, what if your immune system, instead of responding by attacking antigens, actually orchestrates a homeostasis, a balance, cooperation, some form of conciliation of the negative nutrients with a positive immune system so that you create homeostasis. Now then, when you see that your immune system needs more in the way of health, you then provide it with the foods like mushrooms. That would be my number one. Garlic, onions for your immune system. The juices like chlorophyll, chlorella, spirulina, wheatgrass juice, those three alone would do more for your immune system if you took a tablespoon of chlorella powder, wheatgrass powder, and spirulina powder each day. First, you're getting about 35 grams of complete protein. Second, you're getting a full spectrum of chlorophylls, and there's at least 20 different chlorophyll molecules, different molecules in there. You're getting phytonutrients. It's anti-cancer, lowers your blood pressure, thins your blood, helps your digestion, kills bad bacteria in the intestines, and promotes good bacteria. Plus, it also helps prevent strokes and brings down the LDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, and all this from something so simple and so inexpensive, we could do it each day and should. And when I'm helping people detox, that's one of the things they get. But now we know something else. Based upon what this study just showed, when your immune system is faltering, our mindset is, my immune system is under attack. So instead of attack in return, instead, the immune system creates this orchestration. It takes all these 65 different major parts of your immune system and gets them to harmonize together. And that then changes the nature of the pathogen, whether it's bacteria or virus. So when someone says, well, how in the world do you help someone with HIV that has low T cells or no T cells when they have this infection? Well, you're harmonizing the immune system. You're feeding the immune system, both mentally, with what they believe. If you believe something's going to kill you, it speeds up the death process. If you believe you're helpless, it turns the DNA in a dying position instead of a living position. Epigenetics shows this. There are thousands of studies proving this. So what you think directly impacts your body's biochemistry. Now do the same thing with nutrients. Give nutrients that actually cause the body's DNA to repair and reverse degeneration. And now it orchestrates a whole new immune response. Seems a little esoteric, but boy, does it make a difference if you're working with people. Also, something brand new. We've heard about all these injuries, cranial injuries, due to concussion, hockey, football, basketball, boxing. We have tens of thousands of people who have some form of brain injury because of this. And there's virtually no treatment for it. Now there is. This is from Penn State University. This is brand new. Quote, a brain-cooling device and an oral supplement made from pine bark extract, pycnogenol, both have potential to expedite concussion recovery. According to two separate studies, new studies, quote, currently there are no clinically validated tools or procedures to treat concussion injury. This is a professor there. The results of these studies provide some preliminary evidence that concussive brains may benefit from science-based treatments such as brain cooling and the use of new supplement. The first study used an FDA-approved cooling helmet, it's just a helmet, designed by Spartan Medical to explore the biochemical effects of lowering temperature on the brain injuries of athletes. And it's rather simple. They use ice. So the idea is to get the temperature down. Quote, coolant within the unit is chilled and cycles through the head, covering at a temperature about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, cooling the scalp and lowering brain temperatures in 10 to 15 minutes. Athletes in the acute phase of injury or within 7 to 10 days of diagnosis underwent functional MRI and arterial spin labeling tests and MRI techniques for measuring blood flow and tissues before and after, and the cooling made a difference. So, takeaway message. First, always have a bottle of pycnogenol. You need it for your heart. You need it for anti-aging. But also, remember, if you had nothing more than just ice in a towel and you put it on someone's head if they've been injured and have a concussion, that can make a big difference, according to this science. So that's good news, and you never know when you're going to need information like that. And also, global health threat, first-line antibiotics now fail in a quarter of infected patients. This is from the UN General Assembly, and it talked about how many deaths, antibiotic-resistant bacterial deaths per year, just in the United States, 23,000 that we know of. You got to figure it's double that of people who died from an infection, but the cause of death was labeled as something else. Why? They're looking in the wrong place for their answers. This is the danger of monotheistic science, where it looks in one area because that's where its funding is, or that's where its discipline is, that's where its interest is, or their expertise. I work just in the opposite. I work with people with MRSA, life-threatening infections all the time. What is different is I'm looking for natural approaches to bring down the antibiotic level in the system. Because people get on these long-term antibiotics, well, then you've destroyed all the good bacteria. You've also sent the wrong bad bacteria, which has messages it sends to the brain and the immune system. Very destructive. So what will help the immune system of a person suffering from MRSA and other things? First, ozone, intravenous ozone. Second, hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Third, high-dose vitamin C with aqueous vitamin A. It's the vitamin A in synergy. And an aqueous is a non-oil base, which means it doesn't have the fat that will be stored in the liver and could become toxic. So by combining the vitamin A and the vitamin C together at high doses in intravenous, you're able to destroy the pathogenic activity of the bacteria. And then you resupplement the intestine like six times a day with billions of probiotics. And that then suddenly helps a person overcome these. And I'm going to have someone on who overcame gangrene. In fact, he showed up unannounced, didn't know who he was, and he had a massive gangrene. It stunk to high heavens. And I said, you know, what's this? And he said, well, I was supposed to get my leg amputated today, and I was in California hospital yesterday in pre-surgery, and I just thought maybe something could help me. They said nothing could help me. 2 weeks later, he had no gangrene. There were a group of doctors there at the time who saw this, and they saw how it was all done just with massive amounts of juicing So there's a lot of ways of going back and also using one of the great natural antibiotics in the world, Manuka honey, colloidal silver, colloidal gold. Now, finally, from the last week's screening, I took questions that I would answer on the air. And this person's asking, my friend suffers from chronic gas. What can you recommend? Barry. There's many reasons, Barry, why someone suffers from gas. I have found the most common reasons are because they're drinking coffee, which creates a highly acidic reaction in the stomach, causing a reflux. That sensitive hydrochloric acid, which is very caustic, goes up in the esophagus and burns the sensitive mucous membranes. That's one reason. Secondly, I find that people miscombine foods. When you take in a simple sugar, a simple monosaccharide that requires no digestion, and you take in a very complex protein that has been heavily cooked, and the body cannot easily break that down, especially when a person's eating animal protein, generally it's one, two chews, and down it goes with some cold beverage that has phosphoric acid. So that's a whole discombobulation in the stomach. Well, now you have fat and a sugar. Now, the body has no way, the stomach has no way of parting the acid and saying, now, sugars, you're already required in the intestines. You go on in the intestine. It all stays together, and that starts a fermentative process. And that creates gas, massive gas. Miscombining foods. Also, having too much liquid with a meal causes a dumping syndrome where you just have too much volume of food and liquid in the stomach at a time. You should never eat to the point where you feel full. If you feel full, you've overeaten. And that means that you're going to have a long time for that food to digest. In fact, when you eat lunch and you overeat, that's going to be in your stomach when you eat dinner. Well, where's the food from dinner supposed to go when you haven't even digested the food from lunch? You eat a big breakfast, where's the food from breakfast supposed to go when you're now packing it with lunch? So we're mis-eating. We're eating. You shouldn't eat a regular solid breakfast. You should have a beverage like a smoothie where you put a handful of your nuts like walnuts or almonds, pistachios, a tablespoon of coconut oil, tablespoon of flaxseed oil, two tablespoons, about 20 to 25 grams of a complete vegetable protein like split pea, hemp, brown rice. They're all good. And then berries, at least 1 to 2 pints of berries, or they're concentrates. And then you mix that up and you've got your protein, fats, carbohydrates, vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients. That'll all digest in about 45 minutes. If you had bacon and eggs, you're looking at probably 4 to 5 hours to digest. If you have coffee on it, you just destroyed your digestion. Whatever nutrition you have is going to be dumped through the pyloric sphincter into the top 12 inches of the intestine, deacidified, and you're going to end up with leaky gut syndrome more often than not, and your body's own antibody reactions attacking itself because it thinks those partially digested pieces of food, and the food should go in the stomach in the form of bolus, very unsalivated, meaning you really chew your food thoroughly, and then it should go in the intestine as a chyme, CHYME, which is like a thick soup for maximum absorption of the nutrients. And if you take your time and eat, and if you don't eat under stress, and if you don't drink a lot of liquids with your meal, and you take a nice light walk after a meal, then your digestion should be fine. You shouldn't have any gas. And if you need a little help, maybe you lack hydrochloric acid or intrinsic factor, then take a B12, about 1 milligram of methylated B12, 1 milligram of methylated folic acid. Take a little bit of 3 nutrients to help with indigestion. Marshmallow root, that's the herb, cinnamon, and anise. Fennel's also good, but those will help you. All right? That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We have a packed show today. I'm going to share an abbreviated commentary and insight. All of us who are concerned about the racists, those who pride themselves on their bias and prejudice and display their ignorance in these demonstrations, they're not unique, and we should not consider them something of an odd person out. Even though there are small numbers of them, and especially compared to those 100 times more people come out to protest against their bigotry and prejudice, we have to look a little deeper. If we're going to tear down monuments, we should also take an honest look at the people who have sponsored racism or sponsored segregation or sponsored bigotry, not just against African Americans, but against Native Americans as well. And one of those individuals who I feel have been rewarded without scholarship has been Margaret Sanger. Now, I fully support the education programs for helping people who do not want a pregnancy not have an accidental pregnancy. Then you end up with frequently a damaged child. It's not the child's fault. But even someone who doesn't want a child, who is going to abort the child or will not abort it because of religious or social or familial reasons, ends up with a child that will realize it's been rejected. That is part of the science of epigenetics. Bruce Lipton has shown this, and others have as well. Even if nothing is said to the child, just not being wanted is an enormously important factor. So in the way of giving birth control advice and helping people, I think that's very important. And Margaret Sanger, who was born in 1879 and died in 1966, was certainly one of the world's leaders in that, if not the leader. And if you look at the whole concept of birth control, she has to be given credit for opening the first birth control clinic in the United States. And it was only staffed by women physicians, and that evolved into Planned Parenthood back in 1921. So to her credit, she wanted to prevent back alley abortions, and she was the inspiration for the comic book figure Wonder Woman, which most people are not aware of. And she started a diaphragm, which no one would make in the United States, and the government was confiscating them, so she went to Japan to make them. And she was also a member of the women's wing of the Socialist Party, and she fought for labor rights. And she would hang out with John Reed and Upton Sinclair and Emma Goldman. So her resume, if you stop there, would look good. And you could have a difference of opinion on some issues, but at least you realize she was trying to do the best she could. But I like to look at the entire person. And what I see when I look at the entire person was someone who was smart enough to associate with some of the African-American leaders, but only because she was known to have brought the birth control message into the African-American community. And she met with James Hubert and W. E. Du Bois and I believe even Martin Luther King. And they appreciated because there was such a high rate of teenage pregnancies within the Black community. But, and here's the other side of this, and this is why a little knowledge is dangerous. Read the book by Linda Gorman, Woman's Body, Women's Rights, The Social History of Birth Control in America. Here's what Margaret Sanger, many people's hero, said. And now I'm only going to quote her directly from her own articles and her own books. This is not hearsay. This is not political in any way. It's just, if you're going to judge someone, judge them by their words. She said the following. She said, "We do not want a word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. If it ever occurs in any way, there'll be more rebellious members," end quote. In her 1922 Pivot of Civilization, Sanger wrote about blacks and immigrants, quote, "as human weeds," human weeds, quote, reckless breeders, quote, spawning human beings who never should have been born. Also in the same book, quote, Margaret Sanger said, quote, we are paying for and submitting to an ever-increasing, unceasingly spawning class of human beings who never should have been born at all, that our wealth is being diverted from the progress of human civilization. Our eyes should be open to the terrific cost to the community of that dead weight of human waste. Now, Martin Luther King didn't know that. Now, the black leaders knew that. But she doesn't stop there. In 1938, her autobiography, she said, quote, I accepted an invitation to talk to women, the women's branch of the Ku Klux Klan. Saw through the door dim figures parading with banners and illuminated crosses. I was escorted to the platform, was introduced, and began to speak. In the end, through simple illustration explaining the problems with inferior races, that's your blacks, I believe I had accomplished my purpose. A dozen invitations to speak to similar groups were proffered. Did you know that she was a leading spokesperson or a leading lecturer at the Ku Klux Klan? Oh, by the way, that was a Democratic organization. It was created by the Democrats, just so you didn't know. But that's only part of it. I became interested in her work and studied it extensively when I was doing a series called Pathologizing African Americans by Psychiatry. That was a seminal set, three-hour set, where I traced the much of the prejudice against African Americans back to the origins of one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, who was also the first noted psychiatrist in American history, Benjamin Rush. In fact, his face still adorns the seal of the American Psychiatric Association. And he considered blacks black because they suffer from nigritude, or they had a form of leprosy. And so the darker they were, the more leprosy they had. You think that's insane? No, that's the same man who bled the President of the United States, who had a simple cold, bled him to death. But that was the beginning of a whole eugenics movement. And Sanger was a very important part of the eugenics movement. She spent most of her time advocating for eugenics. And eugenics found an agreement with the other eugenicists, especially Havelock Ellis from the British Eugenics Society, and they both sought to help the human race, quote, eliminate those who were unfit. If you were poor, if you're a woman who had a child out of wedlock and were poor, if you were poor African American or Latino or Native American, you were unfit. She divided humanity into two groups: those who were educated, informed, and responsible, and those who were, quote, irresponsible and reckless, often due to religious scuples, which she attacked. This is the group she discouraged procreation. She wrote in 1921 that the purpose of promoting birth control was, quote, to create a race of thoroughbreds. And 2 years earlier stated, quote, more children from the fit. Yeah, the fit. And less from the unfit. That is the chief aim of birth control. So we weren't told that, were we? In her essay entitled, We Must Breed a Race of Thoroughbreds, quote, this is where she argued for her Planned Parenthood clinics should be established, quote, this was the purpose of Planned Parenthood, quote, to breed out of the race the scourges of transmissible disease, mental defect, poverty, lawlessness, and crime, since these classes would be decreasing in number instead of breeding like weeds. She was referring to the African Americans. Of course, there were many other racists at the time. There was Winston Churchill, Herbert Hoover, Theodore Roosevelt, George Bernard Shaw, and H.G. Wells. She believed that for the purpose of racial purification, couples should be rewarded if they chose to be sterilized. She advocated in 1932 that couples be required to submit an application to the government before they have a child. On the mentally handicapped, and this was used by the Nazis to justify their extermination of all mental patients in all the clinics in Germany. I actually have a film that I found in German archives where these psychiatrists are uncorking champagne bottles and celebrating that they got rid of all the mentally fit. And it was a humanitarian gesture, they said. Yeah. Quote, this is from her 1932 Plan for Peace. She outlined her strategy of eradicating those she deemed feeble-minded. Her steps included immigration restriction. Wow. She'd fit right into Trump's cabinet today, would she? Man, someone in Trump's family should have used a condom. And also, on all of them. And also compulsory sterilization and segregation to a lifetime of farm work. So, who was it? I don't remember the name. Who said something about black teenagers in inner cities? You got to bring them to heel because they're natural predators. Who would that have been? Hillary Clinton. Was it Hillary? Oh, yes. Yeah. So there you have it. Take a deeper look at any issue. Step back from an issue. See it for what it is. Don't stop at identity politics. Don't stop at your own prejudice, bias, or someone else's. Look for the truth in everything, and when you find it, then you have something to work on. My first guest is on the air right now. Let's go over and say hello. I gave you his background a little earlier. Kerry Gilman, the environmentalist and agricultural journalist, investigative reporter, to give us the latest update on Monsanto's new herbicide monster, dicamba, D-I-C-A-M-B-A, destroying millions of acres. Nice to have you with us today, Kerry.
Yeah. Hi, Gary. Nice to be here.
Okay. Now we have just gone through a torturous process of uncovering all the different studies, large and small, and then having some of those studies, like Seralini's study, accepted for publication and rejected. And then he sues for slander, wins, not one but twice, and now it's republished. And yet the media will not cover any of the Monsanto issues or the glyphosate issues honestly. So what do you expect from the media when you start campaigning and showing the danger of dicamba?
Well, I am actually heartened to see more and more media coverage of the dicamba problem. This is something that is impacting farmers and, across many, many, many states and really impacting their livelihoods. It's a problem that was predicted years ago. Farmers told Monsanto and told the EPA that their crops would be damaged if dicamba was allowed to be used in the way that it's being used now. And, everything that was predicted is coming true. And, there are lawsuits now against Monsanto and BASF. There is a legal petition against the EPA over this issue. And you are really starting to see, I think, mainstream media jump on this because it's just devastating to so many farmers. And it was completely predicted. And there's really no reason for it other than to boost profits of these chemical companies.
It was the University of, I believe, Missouri that estimated that 2.5 million acres had been damaged and 850,000 acres in Arkansas alone. And this is because dicamba is extremely volatile. It's more, susceptible to drift than other herbicides and easily goes off target. Thereby, when you're spraying with planes, and let's say you have a wind, you have no control over where that's going to go. Also, with all the flooding we're having, which is now biblical flooding, once in 500, once in 1,000-year floods that have happened this year in West Virginia, in Maryland, in Virginia, and in Louisiana, as well as other states, anything that's on that ground, any genetically engineered seeds, any pesticides, herbicides, that's going to be swept away. That's going to be swept into rivers and streams and estuaries, and there's no way in the world to control its contamination of other crops. Your thoughts?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, it's not a sustainable practice. It's environmentally unfriendly. This is decades, though, in the making. This is overuse of glyphosate, which is a key ingredient in Roundup, that Monsanto pushed on genetically engineered crops. Designed to tolerate glyphosate. Weed experts predicted this would result in an explosion of glyphosate-resistant weeds, which it did. The answer that Monsanto and the other companies had to that was, well, let's spray more pesticides. Let's start mixing dicamba and glyphosate and make our crops now genetically altered to tolerate glyphosate and dicamba. It's a pesticide treadmill, and it's not sustainable, and many people warned about this. So we have the short-term crop damage that we're seeing, because anybody who didn't plant these genetically engineered crops is going to have their crops exposed, of course, to the volatilization and the drift from the dicamba, which is extremely, you know, prone to that sort of thing in different weather conditions. So these guys are being damaged right now, but what we're also doing over a longer-term basis is creating more weed resistance, which, you know, what is the answer to that going to be? More pesticide use, no doubt. We need to really get off the pesticide-dependent treadmill and start looking at sustainable measures and traditional farming practices that are better for our soil and our food and our health and our people. Dicamba is just sort of the latest, you know, problem, but it's only one of many out there, truthfully.
Shouldn't we also pay some attention, because the media isn't, to the 3,000 plaintiffs involved in a suit against Monsanto over glyphosate-induced non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? And we have known for a long time the relationship between Roundup and cancer. An Argentinian scientist, Andrew Carrasco, who was on the program a year ago, did very important research showing glyphosate's carcinogenic qualities. And we also know from Monsanto's own federal filings, the company has known this since the early 1980s. So what updates can you give us about the human health risks of Roundup? You see it advertised all the time on television. And how prevalent are glyphosate-caused illnesses and diseases now?
Yeah, these lawsuits really are eye-opening. There are, as you said, about 3,000 or so plaintiffs currently, with many more expected to be joining these lawsuits. But the lawyers have dug up a lot of really interesting internal Monsanto documents through discovery, which show, you know, pretty clearly that the company has worked really hard for decades to hide, manipulate, cover up, pay scientists, ghostwrite, to really manipulate the science around the safety of glyphosate or Roundup. Glyphosate's the main ingredient in Roundup. And, you know, it's alarming when you see a company go to such lengths to hide information or to alter the assessment of information. There are scientific studies that do show, you know, an array of health problems and health impacts, you know, toxicology studies as well as epidemiology studies that link glyphosate to non-Hodgkin lymphoma, multiple myeloma, you know, and some other diseases. Now, it's not clear-cut. It's not black and white. These are things that people are debating and discussing, but a lot of the information coming out in these lawsuits, for sure, the evidence, Monsanto's own documents, and emails between EPA and Monsanto, you know, do indicate the company was working really hard to hide stuff, which is not encouraging. You know, you said earlier, look for the truth, you know, in everything. And that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what the plaintiffs are trying to do. Nobody wants to be going crazy over anything that's false, but we also want to get to the truth. And it looks like that's not what we've been getting from the EPA or from Monsanto when it comes to Roundup.
Carrie, what website can people go to get more information?
Well, we have, if you're interested specifically in, you know, the court cases, U.S. Right to Know, we have a website, the Monsanto Papers. So you just go to www.usrtk.org, and you will find a link to all of the court documents. You can read them yourself. You know, make up your own mind what you think. And then you can also go to my website, www.carriegillum.com, and read articles and read about the book I've done on Monsanto and its secrets about Roundup. But it really is an important issue. You know, this isn't our food. This isn't our food supply. It's in breakfast you probably had. It's in our honey, in our tea, in our bread. So it really does affect everybody.
Your new book is Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer, Cancer and Corruption of Science?
Yeah, it is. I've spent about 20 years researching the agrochemical industry, Monsanto, its products, its practices. You know, it's a it's a much bigger story than Monsanto. It's how our government, how our politics are run, how our policies are implemented.
Carrie, we will invite you back for a full hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour to talk about the larger picture, not just Monsanto.
Great.
And I wish you all the best with sharing this information. Carrie Gillam, G-I-L-L-A-M, and it's Carrie, C-A-R-E-Y, Gillam, G-I-L-L-A-M, .com. Back in a moment for some really good information on how you can slow down and reverse the aging process. Please stay with us. Tonight at 7 p.m., a special tribute to Dick Gregory. I knew Dick for over 45 years, long-time friendship. And I'm taking some of the most interesting audio clips from our archives, and you'll hear that discussion, 7 p.m., Progressive Radio Network, in honor of the late, great Dick Gregory. In studio is Robert Houston. Robert is a scholar. He has spent more than 23,000 hours researching, mainly at New York University Library, but other places. What's in your fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and grains, your food, that can help you slow down and wherever possible reverse the aging process? Nice to have you with us, Robert.
Oh, thank you, Carrie.
What would be some of the foods and that you think should be really more in our diet?
Well, actually, my emphasis is more on anti-cancer agents. But in researching these in the natural diet, I found that they have a halo effect, as you know very well. So what is anti-cancer is also helpful in cardiovascular conditions and arthritic conditions and neurodegenerative conditions. And so it's really hard to just limit it to only one thing like anti-cancer. So what you find is that if you put it all together, you're having a anti-aging effect. So if you put together, so I call a mixture that I make of maybe 25 phytochemicals, I call it immortality pudding.
Good. And what's in that pudding?
Well, you can start with flax seeds to get the omega-3 fatty acids. I grind them in a little electric coffee mill because it's hard to chew them. You can add organic applesauce and various powders, and you can take the phytochemicals that are in. I like to add dried fruit also that is stewed, like stewed prunes or stewed apricots are wonderful, and you puree this and add it together, and you've got a good base in which you can use as a vehicle to add all kinds of things, and basically make a super agent that will potentially, at least in terms of ingredients, take care of most of human ills. At least there is that potential for that. And so you can use these dry supplements, open the capsules, and sprinkle it in into the powder, and then you...
What would be some of the capsules?
Well, for example, as you've discussed, quercetin, resveratrol, curcumin, proanthocyanidins from grapeseed extract, curcumin from turmeric, the spice, and you mentioned luteolin before. There's lutein, there's lycopene, there's milk thistle extract, psilocybin and psilocarin from milk thistle, and tocotrienols, vitamin C, of course, and you can go on and on. Basically, there are about 30 that have been through peer review studies in major medical journals from reputable centers that have been shown to be selectively anti-cancer in the laboratory and sometimes in clinical trials also. You might, and this was supposedly the goal of the war on cancer that started in 1973 was to find something that was a selective agent targeting cancer cells that would be basically non-toxic to normal cells. Well, the laboratory scientists found over 30 of these. The trouble is they're natural products. Thus, they are in the public domain, cannot be patented, and thus of very little or no interest to the drug industry, which depends upon exclusive profits. But one major center went ahead with studies on one of these anyway. And what was the agent? It was green tea extract, whose major phytochemical is called EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate. And this center was none other than the one that had done the negative studies on alternative therapies like vitamin C and like Laetril. It was the Mayo Clinic, the Mayo Clinic. And in 2013, they released their phase two clinical trial of green tea extract for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And what did they find? They found remissions in 69% of the patients given this harmless agent. And they admitted in their report, which I have right here, by the way, that, and this was published in Cancer from the, published by the American Cancer Society. They admitted that standard chemotherapy doesn't really have any real effect in this condition, which is the most common type of leukemia. But the green tea got remissions in 69% of the patients, including palpable adenopathies, lymphomas, and so forth, and these all reduced by more than 50%, which is a standard for regression.
So here you have a highly respected center, the Mayo Clinic, published in a mainstream peer-reviewed journal.
That's right.
Showing positive results that are more than statistically significant, 69%, in a treatment that normally is not benefited by chemotherapy
That's
or radiation,
right.
And yet not a word about this in the mainstream
not
media.
Not a word. Not a word anywhere.
Not a word.
Even in the alternative media for their phase two clinical trial. You know, phase one in clinical testing is for safety and pharmacology. Phase two is to find effectiveness, and they proved effectiveness.
Wow. Okay, so there you got it. Oh, you're giving it to me right now. Thank you. Well, what we're going to do, Robert, I'm going to invite you back for a whole hour because I want the audience to know that this is the Robert Houston that, along with me, as co-authors, we won the Audi Award for Best Investigative Journalism for the first piece ever done in the United States that was published in a national magazine 2 years after it was published in a little Upper East Side newspaper. And all the politics that we found, the politics of cancer, and that opened the door to Peter Barry Chalka, 60 Minutes, 2020, and Gabe Pressman, all these others coming on board. But until that time, it was a sacred cow. And so we have a lot to show what has happened from then till now. How open or closed is the society, cancer societies, the National Cancer Institute? How much is this about profit and politics rather than actually helping people prevent cancer and then treat them with natural and non-toxic means, at least with the science substantiated. So that will be our next discussion, Robert.
Okay, I think we first had this discussion 40 years ago.
We did.
And you look at, you haven't changed a hair in 40 years. I think that may be the same shirt you wore.
It was. So. I haven't taken it off in 40 years, Robert. So Robert Houston, and you can go up on the archives and read the articles that Bob and I did, and Our Town was a newspaper, and there's a front page picture of Robert and I with our awards, and that began the war on cancer that no one had dared take on until that time. We will take it on an upcoming Progressive Commentary Hour, so we have a whole hour uninterrupted to discuss it. But we're out of time now. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in and later today to watch this program. And tonight, a special commemorative evening for Dick Gregory, and you'll hear him in his words. And I've selected things over his career. So you'll hear him, you know, when he was running for president in 1968, a completely different look, and then one of his last interviews. And you'll see the tone, his mannerisms, what he was focusing upon, a whole evolution of this wonderful and unique human being. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day.